Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, I'm delighted to welcome an activist who is addressing the environmental issues in our country, Mr. Rahul Banerjee. Rahul, welcome to the show. Rahul is a BTech in civil engineering from the Indian Institute of Technology, Kharagpur, and a PhD in environmental planning and management with specialization in water resource management from Center for Environmental Planning and Technology, University, Ahmedabad. Rahul is specialized in Adivasi development and natural resource management. He's a voluntary social activist among the Bhil Adivasi indigenous people in Western Madhya Pradesh state of India. He lives in Indore. And his focus has been on urban water resource and energy management today. And today we will talk to him about water. So Rahul, tell me, what would you say are three key milestones in your life or your career?
The first was that when as a student in IIT Kharagpur, I used to go out to do some classes, coaching classes for Adivasi children nearby. There are some Adivasi villages just next to the campus. Mm-hmm. So there I realized that, you know, the life situation of those Adivasis is so bad, and the IITs as an institution are not addressing those problems. So that was the first thing, that when I used to go there in the early 80s, 81, 82, I realized that something has to be done for these people.
Okay.
So that is the first milestone, that I decided I would not pursue a career as a professional engineer or manager. I would instead devote my work to, you know, trying to see how I can improve the lives of the Adivasis.
That's an amazing realization so early in life, isn't it?
Yeah, actually, I was involved in student movements at that time. From the late 70s, right from the time I joined college in 1978, I was involved in various student movements with regard to problems that are there. So my orientation, even though I had joined a professional college, my orientation right from the beginning was towards social work. Okay. So that is why, you know, and then that is how I went to these villages. And so by the time I graduated, in that time it was 5-year course from 78 to 83. By the time I was graduating, I had decided that I would not join these.
Let's move to your second and third milestone.
The second one was when I came to work among the Adivasis in Madhya Pradesh, I realized that I didn't know anything, you know, about the problems that they were facing. Correct. All that I had learned in IIT, at that time, it was not of any relevance to their problems. So then when I started, you know, working with them, I realized that it's the Adivasis, they have a tremendous amount of knowledge, the indigenous knowledge that is there. Main problems are, you know, soil, water conservation, forest conservation. These are the problems that are there. And they have very good ideas how to, you know, solve those problems. So that is the second milestone, that I set aside what I had learned in IIT, and I learned what they had done. And then with them, with the community, we started work on soil, water and forest conservation, which has been tremendously successful over the years. So that is the second milestone that was.
Okay. So, you know, now let's talk a little bit about, you know, urban water resource and energy management. When I was, you know, reading about you, it was such a fascinating amount of you know, stuff you sent me. My first question is, what are the problems of centralized water supply?
You see, the urban cities, they are so big that they have to source their water from some distant place. You see, for instance, if I take the city of Indore, then the city of Indore has to source its water from the Narmada River, which is 50 to 60 kilometers away and some 500 meters down, you know, the height. So that is the problem, not only in Indore, whether you take Mumbai or even Gurgaon, all these places, or Delhi, they have to access their water from some other river source, water source that is at a distance. Now, as soon as you do that, your costs increase tremendously because you have to pump water from a distance to these cities. So that is the main problem of centralized water supply. Okay. That you have to source the water. These concentrated areas where millions of people are staying, to supply them water, you have to source it from a distance, and that involves a huge cost, both ecological and environmental and economical. Okay.
And you know, you have also said that piped water supply leads to greater wastage. Help me understand this with an example.
Yeah, actually, suppose you have to, you need one bucket of water for some purpose. If you have to access it with your own hand, go to a well and get that water, or go to a hand pump and lift that water from a hand pump. You have to expend your own energy, your physical energy. So obviously, you will economize on that. You know, so you will see that for a particular amount of work, if you need just one bucket of water, you will see whether it can be done in half a bucket of water, because you have to expend energy, your own energy, to do it.
Okay.
But when water is supplied by tap, that energy, artificial energy, is being used, and the cost of that, you don't have to bear. You know, in centralized water supply in every city, the amount of cost that is there in, you know, giving that water through taps, that is not recovered by the municipality or the urban local body. Okay. So if the cost is, say, 100 rupees per a certain amount, say the cost, for instance, in Indore, for 1000 liters of water, the municipality has to spend something like 60 rupees. But from the user, they take only 5 rupees. That is the state in Indore, that 60 rupees, they are the cost of that water and fine. So when you get cheap water, then you're not bothered. So even one, you will use more. Two buckets, three buckets, because you're getting it cheap. That is a problem.
So, you know, Rahul, tell me, you know, every city, every government talks of water conservation, right? That, you know, there's work going on, water harvesting, etc. So are some of these schemes really working?
Yes, in principle, these things should work. You know, like, for instance, if you take our building where I'm now sitting and talking, we are water positive because we have water harvesting, water recharge, and wastewater is recycled. All our wastewater, there are two kinds of wastewater, the grey water from the bathroom and kitchen and the black water from the toilets. So we treat them separately. Grey water is treated separately and it's reused. We have a dual plumbing system, so it's reused for gardening and flushing toilets, you know. So if these things are there in principle, and if they're implemented, then a particular house can become water positive. I mean, not only you don't have to take water from outside, but actually our house here is contributing to water, to the environment. It's water positive. So it's not that it can't work. The problem is that to work on a large scale, the municipality has to take the decision to, you know, promote this. So in the laws, like, for instance, the development rules of the Indore Municipal Corporation, it is there that you have to do water recharging and water harvesting and wastewater treatment and all these things, but they're not implemented. You know, so instead they provide centralized water supply. If they say that, you know, that you are not going to provide centralized water supply, you have to take care of your water yourself, then people will do these things.
Okay, but you know, I'm literally thinking as you're talking, most of us in the last few years have become very conscious of waste management. Now, we have started to segregate our waste and put it into different bins, etc. Do you think every household can become water positive?
Yes, definitely. I mean, if it's a, like, our house is a standalone house, you know, on 1500 square feet, and it's a two-story house. So we have a garden in front in which we do all kinds of waste management. Even the solid waste management is managed there, and then the water and everything, and the treating of the water and reuse and all that. And if you're living in a flat system, say you are living in a flat system, there are 50 flats. It's a multi-story building with 50 flats. So all those flats together below, where you have the parking area and all that, below the parking area, you can have a water harvesting tank where you can, you know, harvest all the water from the rainwater. And you can have a treatment plant also. It can treat. So it's not that it's not possible, and it's cheaper. You know, see, for instance, what happens, this whole thing about wastewater management is that if you do it at a decentralized level, the cost of managing is less. because the gray water, can be easily treated. It doesn't cost much. And of the total wastewater, 90% is gray water. The water we use for bathing, washing clothes and all that. Only 10% is black water from the toilets, which is difficult to treat, which is more costly. But what we are doing is, when we have a centralized wastewater system, this 90% gray water and the black water, they're mixed, and the whole thing becomes black. And then the cost of treatment goes up immensely, and then you have to transport. There are a lot of problems with transporting also. The sewage system, that also is problematical. So there a lot of cost is there, and then people die trying to clean those sewers, and all that kind of problem comes up. So all these problems, that, and then it goes to the sewage treatment plant, and then it's a huge cost. When it once millions of liters of water, for instance, the water supply, say, is 100 liters. Then 90 liters of that is becomes wastewater. You know, when if your house gets 100 liters of water, centralized water supply, potable water, then 90 liters becomes wastewater out of that. So then that's another big cost out there. Whereas that 90 liters, of which 80 liters is actually gray water, you can treat it very easily and then use it for plumbing and gardening. You know, which are the main, so it's actually, in my opinion, it's criminal to, you know, costly potable water you're using for flushing toilets and gardening. That is a criminal waste. You see?
And at the same time, what we are also seeing in some of the older cities, older developments, there's a lot of sewage water that's beginning to contaminate drinking water. What are the answers to that? Just redoing the entire infrastructure?
Yes, that is what I was saying, that the problem with sewage. You see, the sewer systems, when you design those sewer systems, you have to design with a 30-year kind of thing, because it's a huge investment, you know, that sewer. So you have to design with a flow, that 30-year flow, that 30 years later, what will be the flow? Now, the problem with that is that actually at the moment, the flow is not that that much. So the speed with which the water flows is much less than what it should be, and then all the deposition takes place. And then that deposition, that is corrosive material, you know, that feces that is deposited, that is corrosive, it corrodes the sewers and creates problems, and then it leaks into the groundwater, and if there's a pipeline nearby, which has also become old and got leaked, so then it's a problem. So that is what I'm saying, that this whole thing of, you know, carrying wastewater to a different location and then treating it, that itself is, you know, not correct.
And, you know, based on all your experience, are the problems of most cities in India similar, or are they very different?
Yes. All the cities, it's the same problem. The first problem that you mentioned, that centralized water supply, you know, that it has to be brought from a distance. And if there is no nearby source that is enough to supply, then like in Gurgaon, you have groundwater. You know, so you start mining the groundwater and goes. So all these, and even in Calcutta, like in Kolkata, which has just next to it, it has a river. Even there, the water central, because it's very costly, supplying water centralized system is an extremely costly thing that Indian municipalities are not able to do. This is something that has come from the West. They have money, they can do it. But here, we are not able to do it. So in Kolkata also, which has just a river next to it, there also they are not being able to supply. So what happens when they go for groundwater? And in groundwater, when you go below in Kolkata, when you go below 200, 300 feet, you hit arsenic. So there is arsenic poisoning in there. Oh, so, you know, this is a serious problem. So you, it's across, regardless of whether it's in a dry land area like Gurgaon or Delhi, or whether it's in a wetland area like Kolkata, this problem is yes, it's universal.
And it's so unfortunate that we've not had any city with enlightened leadership who could take this on as an example and show it to the rest of the country, you know, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, I think because as I told you, it's all there in the laws. You know, whether it's the manuals that are there. There's one organization called the Central Public Health and Environment Engineering Organization, and it has manuals for water supply and wastewater management. And in them, it has mentioned that it is advisable to have decentralized systems. You know, it is advisable to have water recharging and water harvesting and gray water treatment and reuse, and all those things are there in the manual. So it's not as if that knowledge is not there. It's not that knowledge is not there within the company. It is there. But as you said, that will to, you know, implement that whole thing, you have to take everybody together. The knowledge is there in a few people, but the general public doesn't have that knowledge.
Correct.
So now it is the responsibility of the government to, you know, educate the public. That is not happening.
So, you know, two more questions on water. You know, are we in India moving towards a water supply from tankers in most of our cities?
Yes, that is what is happening. You see, as I said, because the centralized water supply is so costly, the municipalities are not able to do it.
Hmm.
So the other option is to, you know, rely on groundwater. And if a particular housing area doesn't have groundwater, you know, that is also a problem. Groundwater is not available everywhere.
Mm.
Groundwater is available in certain places according to the hydrogeology.
Correct.
So then that housing society will have to import water from somewhere.
Mm.
So this tanker economy is there. And part of that's also politically there also, I mean. There's a political mafia that is, you know, involved in all these kind of things.
Sure.
So they're promoting that.
Sure. And, you know, Rahul, my next question is that if you look at developed world, you know, large parts of Europe, Singapore, many cities in America, they're now saying just drink tap water because it's absolutely clean. What are they doing differently that we are not doing in our country?
Yeah, they have the money. You see, the main thing is you can have anything, like any service or any product. In mobile phones, you have Apple on one side, iPhone. Yes. On the other side, you have these dabba phones, which cost only 700, 800 rupees.
Sure.
An iPhone costs some 60,000 to 1 lakh rupees.
Mm.
So the thing is that any service has various levels of quality. So if you have the money, you can do it. I mean, they have the money. These developed countries, they have the money to do it for various reasons. Let's not go into why they have the money and why we don't have the money. But the reality is that we don't have the money. You know, ULPs in this country, except for Mumbai, any other ULP you take is in deficit. You know, Mumbai, because it has all these rich people out there, they are the only ULP that is in surplus.
Correct.
But even they are not following these policies. You know,
correct.
So the thing is that providing tap water, portable tap water, drinking quality tap water is a hugely expensive thing. So I don't think it's possible in India.
Okay. And, you know, one more question is, there's a lot of talk that in some parts of India we have drought, some parts of India we have floods. For the purpose of an equitable distribution of water, is there any future in this thing of linking rivers so that everyone has water?
See, the inter river basin transfer, you know, suppose you have one river basin which has surplus water and you want to transfer it to another river basin which has deficient in water. Now the problem here is that between these two river basins there is a ridge. No, so that is why those two river basins are there. The watershed is such that between there is a ridge.
Correct.
And you have to cross that ridge.
Yeah.
You know, so if the two river basins are parallel, they are going parallel, like for instance the Narmada river basin and the Sabarmati river basin, they are flowing parallel towards the Arabian Sea. Now, what they have done is Narmada in Gujarat, Narmada, they have dammed at a height, you know, at a height. And from there, by gravity, they are taking the water to the Sabarmati river basin. Because this height in the Narmada, where they have dammed the Narmada river, is higher than the ridge in between these two basins.
Okay.
See, so only because you have to take water by gravity, you can't pump. So, if you want to, then it becomes very costly. Suppose that ridge between those Narmada and Sabarmati, you had to pump water from the Narmada basin to Sabarmati. That's a huge expense. You can't do that. So, when you have two river basins going parallel and in one basin, the general height where you are damming that river is so high that you can by gravity take it to the other basin, then that is feasible. You know? So that you have to see whether that is possible, in which basins it is possible. So far, very few basins are like that. Like for instance, people say that, you know, Ganges basin has so much water and we want to transport it to the south. But that is impossible. You can't do it. Because the Ganges basin, the height of the Ganges basin is in Uttarakhand. You know, so from Uttarakhand, if you dam the water at Uttarakhand and you want to bring it down, it will come up to the Ganges basin. But it can't cross from the Ganges basin to the next basin, the Chambal basin or something like that. You know, so this is what people don't understand. But you can't link like that. Just you think that, you know, I will link the Brahmaputra to the Ganges Basin. That's not really possible.
I agree. It's a big challenge. So tell me, you know, with the incredible amount of work experience that you have on water, why is it that the common Indian is not so aware of water conservation? I mean, we still have big showers in houses. We still have running water. We use multiple liters of water when we can do it. We could shave with just 2 inches of water in a mug and we have running. What needs to be done? I mean, you know, I keep seeing fits and starts on water conservation, but it's not yet part of our lifestyle.
See, the thing is that in any society, it's the government, you know. Whether it's the economy or whether it's environment or anything, any society, even the American society, which people say is capitalist and, you know, it's privatized and all that, even there, the government contribution to the GDP is 40%, you know. 40% and education, especially education, you know, the school education is totally free. It is, you know, subsidized by the government. So unless the government takes you have to be that what you are saying that, well, and the government is controlled by the politicians and all that. Now, unless there is a level of understanding in the politicians that, you know, we have to take this up on a urgent basis, because priority basis, because India has become water stressed. You know, right. Most of these cities like Gurgaon and all, they are, within a few years, they are going to be in serious trouble.
Correct.
So the government has to take a step in this. You know?
Very interesting. So we have time for one more question for you. And this question I'm going to ask you on a personal basis. Rahul, with so much experience and, you know, being an activist and doing so many things in so many sectors, as you look back from the time you started this whole process out of IIT, what does success mean to you? And a follow-up to that is, who or what inspires you to keep doing such amazing things?
See, I have never formulated my work in terms of success. Because primarily because the kind of problems that I have taken up are so huge that it's very difficult to succeed in them. So my concentration has been that, okay, this problem is there, this is a major problem, and let me try and solve it. And I try to see that I'm always honest about trying to solve, you know. So from time to time I flag in my efforts and then I just push myself. So that is the way I work. You know, I've never thought of success. I've only said that, okay, this problem is there, let me try and solve it in the best way. Okay. And try to improve myself. That is the way.
And the follow-up I asked you, you know, you keep pushing yourself to doing such amazing things for the greater good of people. Who or what inspires you?
So it's the Adivasis. As I said, see, when I came to Alirajpur in Madhya Pradesh 35 years back, I first thing I learned was that these people are fantastic, you know. So they live a subsistence lifestyle, and most of them they don't aspire to a rich lifestyle. You know, the things are changing, but generally their thing is that they say that, okay, the nature is there and this is there, this is what I want, and I'm happy with that, and I want to improve, I want to live in that. So that is a thing, you know. So this commitment to nature, that is what I have learned from them, and that is how I live my life all the time. I try to see that I become better in my relationship to nature.
Very nice. Rahul, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. I know I have learned so much about water just talking to you, and I'm sure the thousands of people who will listen to you and me talking will learn a lot. Thank you again, and I wish you lots of success.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Just search for the Brand Called You.